This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It is claimed that in South Africa, being a farmer is more than twice as dangerous as being a police officer.
That's the member of the South African Parliament's Intelligence Committee on the spike of brutal attacks on farms and rural communities during the COVID-19 lockdown. Details coming up. Also, the death toll from 2 days of unrest in Ethiopia because of a killing of a popular protest singer has risen to at least 80. And there is an upsurge in crime since South Africa ended its hard lockdown because of COVID-19. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Hachalu Hundessa, the popular Ethiopian protest singer from the country's largest ethnic group, was buried today as the death toll from 2 days of unrest rose to at least 80. Armed gangs are reported to be roaming the capital, Addis Ababa, targeting rival ethnic groups. 34-year-old Hachalu was shot dead Monday night. He had reported receiving death threats. Two suspects were arrested, but no charges were immediately filed. Hachalu's songs gave voice to the Oromo's long-standing sense of marginalization. The funeral in his hometown was marred by violence as one group was demanding that he should be buried in the capital Addis Ababa. Also provoking anger on Wednesday was the arrest of leading opposition politician Jawar Mohammed, also on Oromo. The Oromaya police chief says a grenade attack on the family home in Ambo killed Hachalu's uncle and two police officers. VOA Salem Salomon has more details and reaction.
As anger boils over among Ethiopia's Oromo population following the death of a revered singer, observers say swift action and transparency by the government are necessary. Hachalu Hundessa was shot in Addis Ababa on June 29. Police quickly apprehended suspects, but few details have been released, fueling suspicion and sparking a violent backlash. Henok Gabisa, a professor of practice at Washington and Lee University School of Law, said Hachalu's music was the soundtrack of the Oromo Revolution. His death came after an appearance on the Oromia Media Network, where he criticized Ethiopia's leadership.
Hachalu is way more than a musician. I mean, he's way more than an artist. Hachalu is an activist artist who always stood his ground, who spoke truth to power way long time ago when it was difficult to do.
The murder comes at a time when tensions are already high amid restrictions relating to COVID-19 and the postponement of parliamentary elections formerly scheduled for August. In a national address, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed sought to quell tensions. More than being a national figure, he was a close friend. The sorrow is very deep, he said. But the wish of our enemies is for us not to reach our goals so that the Oromo people can't live with other ethnicities and we would paint each other with blood. They want us to trip on the journey we have started. This attempt has been tried repeatedly, he added. Observers warn that a slow or heavy-handed government response risks a repeat of past protests among the Oromo ethnic group that led to hundreds of deaths. In November 2019 alone, 86 people were killed in protests following allegations that security forces were plotting to attack Jawar Mohammed, an activist and co-founder of Oromia Media Network. Letitia Bader is the Human Rights Watch Horn of Africa director.
And so it's absolutely key that the Ethiopian authorities respond to this by acting urgently to reduce tensions and to ensure that security forces do not make what could be a combustible situation worse. The government needs to order security forces not to use excessive force or to carry out arbitrary arrests, including against protesters, as they've often done in the past.
as during past periods of unrest, Ethiopia's government-controlled telephone and internet provider, Ethio Telecom, shut off internet access. Bader said this lack of access to information adds to the confusion.
It's absolutely key for the government to make sure that as soon as possible, it is providing accurate, timely information to the public on what they're doing to investigate yesterday's killing, but also how they are responding to what could be a very tense situation.
Protesters have been further angered this week as news spread that Jawara Mohammed was arrested and the domestic operations of his television network were shut down. A total of 35 people have been arrested in Addis Ababa, including Oromo leader Bekele Garba. Merera Gudina, chair of the Oromo Federalist Congress and opposition party, said the events show the urgent need for reform. He called for a commission with representatives from all sectors of society to oversee the way political opponents and protests are treated in Ethiopia.
We want some sort of more inclusive commission that can oversee some of the way the government is conducting its business, including the way the election board is running, the way the security sector is, the army, the police, or the militia, the way they are behaving, the way the judiciary is behaving, all sectors of the government, all institutions of the government is not properly functioning. So that's our worry.
The opposition is also demanding more transparency and accountability from the government. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
A top African Union official says some airlines on the continent won't survive the impact of COVID-19. Amani Abu Zayed, the AU's Commissioner for Infrastructure and Energy, told a news conference today that African countries have lost almost $55 billion in travel and tourism revenues in 3 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. African leaders and health experts have called for equitable and fair access to any approved vaccine against the coronavirus. Governments across the continent are organizing themselves to manufacture any vaccine quickly. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus, said Wednesday that huge investment was needed for any approved COVID-19 vaccine to be quickly made available throughout Africa.
Only one virus in history has been eradicated. It's likely that COVID-19 will be with us for the foreseeable future, and we must learn to live with it. A vaccine will be an essential tool for doing that.
He was speaking at a conference in Addis Ababa, organized by the African Union and the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Africa is seeing increasing numbers of confirmed infections as testing on Tuesday became available in every country on the continent. The WHO on Wednesday said Africa had over 321,000 confirmed infections. African leaders and health experts attending the conference said the continent's most vulnerable and health workers would need a vaccine soonest. Director of the Africa CDC, Dr. John Nkangasong, said countries should be preparing.
As a continent, we should be positioning ourselves to conduct clinical trials across the continent in a network fashion. We should also enable regulatory processes that will facilitate uptake of vaccines. We also need to secure deals through bilateral governments.
South Africa, the African country worst hit by the virus with over 100,000 confirmed infections, on Tuesday reported its highest daily death toll, 111 people since the pandemic began. Salim Abdul Karim is chair of the South African Ministerial Advisory Committee for COVID-19. He said countries would need to deal with intellectual property issues to move quickly to manufacture a vaccine.
Most of the companies that are developing vaccines are developing it basically with a twofold market strategy. The first is to have a profitable market in the wealthy countries, and then to have a voluntary license market in the countries that will not be able to afford purchasing the vaccine. In terms of countries that can't afford the vaccine, the voluntary licensing will enable, you know, big manufacturers in India and China to manufacture it under license. And then they would supply it to various countries.
Karim said that the world's poorest countries would likely be covered through Gavi, a global vaccine alliance spearheaded by the United Nations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He said that developing countries, such as South Africa, would likely purchase vaccines at a fraction of the cost. Meanwhile, African countries are responding to the pandemic, but there are gaps with providing safety equipment and inconsistent measures to stop the virus that still make the continent vulnerable. WHO Director General Ghebreyesus said the pandemic is now accelerating at an alarming rate globally, and while it took more than 3 months for the virus to infect 1 million people, the last 1 million cases were reported in just 1 week. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
There's been an upsurge in crime since South Africa ended its hard lockdown because of COVID-19 a few weeks ago. The police reports that just about every kind of crime is increasing, including murder and gender-based violence. There have also been more attacks on South African farms. Darren Taylor reports.
Between the end of March and the middle of June, crime rates in South Africa dropped to their lowest levels in decades. Security analysts expected this since police and soldiers were patrolling the streets. Millions of people, including criminals, were confined to their homes. But now that there's more freedom of movement, police say it's as if the criminals are making up for lost time. The leader of the official opposition Democratic Alliance, John Steenhuisen, says it's clear that some of the gangs favour certain targets.
We've seen an upsurge in a number of farm attacks and have seen an upsurge of brutal violent activities taking place in rural communities across South Africa.
Since South Africa became a democracy in 1994, thousands of white farmers have been murdered.
It is claimed that in South Africa, being a farmer is more than twice as dangerous as being a police officer.
Diane Kola-Barnard is a member of Parliament's Intelligence Committee. She says criminals attack farms because they're isolated.
The attackers have far more time, taking hours or sometimes even days, to torture the farm owners or workers, sometimes in the belief that there is a safe or a second safe filled with firearms and jewels. Other times, they kill the family and take nothing at all.
This has led to some believing that robbery is sometimes not the motive for farm attacks, rather that farmers are targeted because they're white.
Over the past 2.5 weeks, both the attacks and the levels of violence have escalated dramatically. Brutal torture is commonplace in rural attacks. Women and daughters, no matter how young, are raped in front of their parents and husbands who are forced to watch. Some are burned with hot irons or pots of boiling water. Others are tied up and hacked into pieces.
Some criminologists say these are obviously racially motivated hate crimes. But the police and the state insist their general lawlessness. Kola-Barnard says farmers now face twin threats of crime and financial ruin because of the COVID-19 lockdown.
Their outlets and the markets were destroyed. Restaurants, supermarkets, hawkers on the street corners. It left no distribution outlet for their product, and their income stream simply dried up. And if the farmers can't pay the banks, they won't be able to grow crops for the country going forward, as the banks will refuse to lend money to them for the upcoming season.
Using its COVID-19 relief package, the government has given aid to small-scale, mostly black farmers, but none to large-scale, mostly white food producers. That and crime, says Kola-Barnard, mean food security in South Africa is in grave danger.
Now, in 1980, there were 128,000 commercial farmers in our country. Today, there are under 40,000. Each farmer feeds some 1,500 South Africans. So there is enormous room for concern.
Demographic analysts expect the country's population, presently around 60 million, to increase by 7 million by 2030. Kola-Barnard asks, who's going to feed all the people if South Africa has only a few big farmers left? For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The new U.S. Special Envoy to Burundi, Peter Pham, met today with the country's new president, retired Army General Evariste Ndayishimiye. While elected in May, the 52-year-old Ndayishimiye took office early following the death of predecessor Pierre Nkurunziza. While Burundi has become increasingly isolated, Pham carried messages expressing hope for cooperation with the U.S.
As the Special Envoy of the United States, I had the honor to deliver to His Excellency the President of the Republic a letter from his American counterpart, President Trump, wishing him and the Burundian people best wishes on this anniversary of independence, and also hoping that we can work together to achieve our common goals. And I also delivered a letter from His Excellency the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to the President as well.
In a reversal from his predecessor, Ndayishimiye said Tuesday he was ramping up efforts to fight COVID-19, calling the coronavirus the country's biggest enemy. He said strict new guidelines will be posted soon. Under Nkurunziza, Burundi did not take the aggressive measures seen in many other countries. He held large political campaign rallies and expelled officials from the World Health Organization. Cameroon's displaced Anglophones who fled the separatist war in western regions to the capital are accusing authorities of harassment. Last week, the government declared a security alert following two explosions in the capital Yaoundé and began raids on houses in English-speaking majority neighborhoods. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Many English-speaking Cameroonians in the capital say they have stories of all deals with the police, either in their houses or along the streets. One of them is a 31-year-old journalist who will call Rose to protect her safety. She told VOA that since her national identity card expired a week ago, all attempts to get a new one from the police identification office have failed.
When I approached the police officer, she asked me my profession and I told her I was a journalist. She shouted at me and drove me out of her office because I spoke in English. She told me that we are Anglophones and we are Ambazonians and we ran from our places and we are hiding in Yaoundé.
Rose, who fled fighting in the southwestern town of Mamfe 2 years ago, said she submitted a complaint to the police headquarters in Yaoundé and is still waiting for a reply. 32-year-old Baba Genesis Ngumula escaped fighting in the northwestern town of Bafut 3 years ago. He says he has been arrested twice this week, and both times he was accused of being a separatist fighter. He says he was forced to pay an illegal fee of about $90 to regain his freedom.
They say that we are from Bamenda, that we are even the Amber Boys, that we come and hide in Balade. I was surprised that they locked me up there. Then the next day, they asked me to pay 50,000. I was forced to borrow the money to pay before I go out of the place. We were there more than 25 in the one small cell.
The harassment of English speakers has intensified within the past 2 weeks when Cameroon declared a security alert in Yaoundé. The government said two bombs exploded in the capital city. Nasiri Paul Beya, governor of the central region of Cameroon, where Yaoundé is located, says he has not sent out the police and military to harass anyone. He says the police should instead make sure there is peace in the city.
A series of controls are taking place which have no objective to want to go to a particular quarter or particular areas where people of particular regions live. It is intended for the security of each and every one of us. And when the police and the gendarmes come, they should be able to cooperate.
Beya promised to punish any police officer who abuses the rights of civilians. Activist Hamad Abdurrahman of the Cameroon Rights Center says it is unfortunate that bad treatment is given to English speakers who have escaped from the crisis-prone regions for safety. He says if care is not taken, the English speakers may be radicalized. Abdurrahman says Cameroonians should respect each other's language, origin and culture if they want to live in peace and harmony. He says the government should work together with rights groups to encourage all Cameroonians to cultivate tolerance. The United Nations says more than 500,000 English-speaking Cameroonians have fled the northwest and southwest regions since 2016, when separatist groups began fighting for an independent country. A majority of the displaced now live in the French-speaking regions of the Central African state. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Nigeria's government has lifted its ban on interstate travel, although COVID-19 cases are increasing in the country. Gifta Gariga from Abuja, Nigeria, has the details.
Starting July 1st, the Nigerian government has eased its ban on interstate travels. The decision is getting a mixed reaction, in part because of fears more travel could add to the daily rise of the COVID-19 cases Nigeria is currently experiencing. Ocharifu Emmanuel, a radio television commentator, is among those unhappy with the move.
I don't understand how we do things in this part of the world. Are we leaving the citizens now to their fate to go and face what is there in spite of this coronavirus increase that we've been having every day?
However, transport manager Ikenna Umadi welcomes the development.
This is to an extent stop the pandemic hunger strike. Well, most of us, the transport sector, depend on this for our daily bread.
Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, became the third on the continent to record over 10,000 cases of COVID-19. Many Nigerians still do not believe that the coronavirus exists. Dr. Laz Udeze is a public health physician. He says, with the daily rise in cases of COVID-19, Nigerians need to take responsibility for their lives.
We've gotten to a point that we have to do massive risk communication, health education, massive awareness, and behavioral change communication, and hoping that people are going to take responsibilities to protect themselves from the virus.
Udeze commended the government for the improvements made so far in testing Nigerians.
Nigeria had 5 testing laboratories that have the capacity to test for COVID-19 as at the time the first case was confirmed. But right now, you have more than 30 labs. That's progress. The testing capacity has improved.
According to the Nigeria Center for Disease Control, there are more than 25,000 confirmed cases in the country. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.